From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Ahead of the highly anticipated one-on-one summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin in Helsinki next week, political pundits and media analysts are making sweeping pronouncements. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey said on Wednesday that he was, quote, worried how the president will unfold during the meeting. Menendez added during his CNN interview that Russia is, quote, an adversary. From my view, they're a foe. Independent Senator Angus King echoed that sentiment on the same day, also on CNN, saying that he was, quote, afraid that we're playing into Putin's hands. He added that Putin, quote, views the Western alliance as a threat and he wants to see it undermined. That's their strategy. Now, a letter signed on to by dozens of progressive academics, activists, and analysts, such as Gloria Steinem, Noam Chomsky, and Michael Moore, is calling for calm in the midst of the anti-Russia hysteria. The letter is entitled Common Ground for Secure Elections and True National Security. One of the letter's signatories, Norman Solomon, now joins me. Norman Solomon is a journalist with ExposeFacts.org, a project of the Institute for Public Accuracy, where he is the executive director. He's also the author of War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, and a co-founder of RootsAction.org. Welcome to the program, Norman.
Thanks, Sonali.
So this letter, which was just published in The Nation magazine, has a lot of prominent signatories, and it's called Common Ground. This idea of the role that Russia has played in the United States has really taken root for the last couple of years almost, or at least year and a half. What is the main goal of this letter?
I think the real purpose is to put a context around all of the Russiagate frenzy and sort of step back for the long view. Do we want future generations to survive? You know, there's understandably huge concern about climate change, but we rarely hear how a nuclear exchange of missiles between Russia and the United States would instantly, or in a matter of weeks, create nuclear winter and basically speed up climate change to the point that agriculture on the planet would end within a matter of months. So this is a recognition that while there's so much partisan politics being played around Russiagate and an anti-Russia fervor, when you look at the big picture, humanity is at stake. So as you mentioned, this open letter has been launched and a petition drive now behind it to say, look, let's get beyond the false choice or whether we want digital security for our election apparatus in this country, and whether we want true national security, which would mean, frankly, don't blow up the world.
How do you explain what Trump's real attitude towards Russia is? Because it's quite confusing. At the NATO summit this week, he accused Germany of being controlled by Russia. It was a very bizarre comment that he made out in public and then posted the video of it to Twitter. He basically said that because Germany was, working with Russia for a natural gas pipeline, that meant that Germany was in Russia's pocket. The Germans found this quite bizarre. And right before that expression, he had talked about how he thought his meetings, of all the meetings he was to have with heads of state this week, his meeting with Putin would be the easiest. How do you make sense of Trump's attitude towards Putin?
Well, making sense of Trump is almost an impossible task. Whatever his mental health issues and how to explain his erratic behavior as president, the fact remains that he's largely surrounded himself with militaristic hawks who have a long history that hasn't ended of individual and political, geopolitical hostility towards Russia. And I think it's ultimately most important to look at what he does, which is for the most part to continue to gin up an aggressive stance towards Russia. At the same time, I think we've got to recognize that the mass media of the United States, in concert with the huge pressure from the hierarchy of the Democratic Party is egging on and sniping and baiting Trump to be able to induce him, encourage him and his vanity to get more hostile towards Russia. And as I alluded to a couple of minutes ago, the hostility is not just hot air. We've got thousands of nuclear missiles in both countries pointed at each other on basically hair trigger alert. And the United States, which has expanded NATO to the Russian border, contrary to promises made by the United States government from the top at the time of the fall of the Berlin Wall, this is so much at stake. And I think that's why the mass media and the Democratic Party so-called leadership in Congress must be challenged to look at what is really at stake here. What is the probable or at least foreseeable result of momentum towards more and more confrontation with Russia by the United States? And that's why this open letter, which can be found with a link at the rootsaction.org website, really goes to the heart of that, or mechanical militaristic heart of this anti-Russia frenzy. You know, I know so many people who are progressive, who have worked hard for progressive change, and they've been caught up in this just contagion of villainizing Russia to the point that they've lost perspective about what is at stake in terms of what would happen with a nuclear war and the reality, as this open letter that The Nation magazine published points out, the reality that more tension with Russia means a greater chance of nuclear conflagration. And we just need to get real about that. And I think this open letter is a step towards, we hope, a sea change in attitude among progressives and others. We need that sea change very desperately.
Norman, I want to ask you about NATO and militarism, which you brought up earlier. And just to remind our audience, the NATO is, you know, NATO stands for North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And this is a coalition that was designed to basically buttress Europe against the Cold War era threats from then USSR. And with the fall of the Soviet Union, many have argued that NATO shouldn't exist anymore, but we keep wanting to give NATO a new lease on life since the early 1990s. Do you see Trump's insistence that European allies increase their military budgets from NATO's requirement of 2% of their budgets to 4%, which is what he asserted this week, and actually claimed that he had successfully managed to convince them, which it turns out was a false claim. Do you see that urging of Europe's military budgets to increase as part of that militarism that generals here in the U.S. are pushing Trump to do?
Very dangerous push. And while it's called defense spending, it's truly militarist spending. The mission of NATO has been in search of enemies after the end of the Soviet Union and the Soviet bloc. And you've pointed this out to the nation and the world as much as anybody, Sonali. The NATO role in Afghanistan has been the opposite of defense. It has been an aggressive role, which continues, as was the case back in 1999, where the United States, contrary to and really thumbing its nose at Russia's position, bombed Yugoslavia, bombed Kosovo, mobilized NATO, redefined NATO into an aggressive force. Mm-hmm. And when you combine that with, as I mentioned, the expansion of NATO, can you imagine if the Warsaw Pact had expanded to Guatemala or Canada or Mexico? People in Washington would have gone nuts. They would have seen it as encirclement and a push towards a World War III attack. And yet, we're acculturated in the U.S. mass media and from the heads of the Democrat and Republican parties in various venues to just see that as the role of the United States. Naturally, we should run the world. Well, that is just a kind of a crackpot realism, as C. Wright Mills put it, that could end in a disaster quite plausibly for the world.
Norman, there is very real concern among Americans that Russians attempted to interfere in the U.S. elections. And there have been numerous reports about hacking attacks on the electoral systems in the United States. We have a very broken electoral system, a state-by-state patchwork, manner of conducting elections that is, of course, vulnerable to hackers. And in your letter, you acknowledge that. Can you expand a little bit more on, you know, how we as Americans should view what happened in 2016 and whether or not Russian hackers did indeed attempt to attack the electoral systems in the United States?
There's a very wide range of opinion in the U.S., and I don't think that's going to change over whether and to what extent Russia, quote, interfered with the 2016 U.S. election. And the open letter is, I think, a strong effort to say, look, we need to find common ground and identify our common interests, whatever people's perspectives are. Some people are furious that anyone would even doubt Russia interfered in the election. Others point to some real reasons to question the categorical claims of the so-called intelligence community of the United States. Whatever people's viewpoint, the reality is that there is a common interest in safeguarding the U.S. election system, and the open letter refers to the official voter suppression efforts within the United States. There's also the reality of the hackability at many levels, county, state, and so forth, of the electoral process. And as you noted, the open letter points out that the hacker could be from anywhere. I mean, whether in Russia or in the next county, hackers have made clear that the U.S. electoral system is vulnerable. So let's deal with that and make the system much more protected from hackers wherever on the planet they may be.
The other, of course, big concern that many Americans have, and we can't blame ordinary Americans for having these concerns because they hear about it in the media reportedly, which is that Vladimir Putin has something on Donald Trump, that there is some blackmail material that Putin is using to keep Trump under his thumb. And that's why Putin engineered the election to get Trump elected and essentially is going to get Trump to do his bidding. Now, of course, Trump has very openly taken on a lot of anti-Russia posturing, which would contradict this claim. But what do you make of these allegations? We know that Trump has dealings with Russian businessmen and oligarchs. That is indisputable. He has business interests in Russia. He wants to build a Trump Tower in Russia. That is indisputable. So how do you clarify this alleged relationship between Trump and Putin?
Well, Trump definitely has business interests and a stake in the role of the Russian government, as the Trump empire has business interests in many different countries around the world and has tried to pull political strings on that basis. We don't know the details of what Trump may or may not have in terms of his desire to please Putin, but we do know that whatever that relationship is, there are also pernicious relationships between the Trump business organization and oligarchs in Saudi Arabia and Israel and many other countries, Turkey. And so this goes to a point that actually Roots Action has been making publicly since Inauguration Day, that Trump should be impeached because of his violations of the Foreign and Domestic Emoluments Clauses of the U.S. Constitution, which forbid the president from benefiting from any interactions with other countries or, for that matter, inside the United States that have any presidential role in their own personal profits. So I think that to make it a unique issue around Putin and Russia is a circumscribing of what the real huge problems are with Trump. And that circumscribing has been at the service of, let's face it, the military-industrial complex, people in the CIA and NSA and elsewhere, and they're huge multi-billion dollar contractors who have an enormous bread and butter stake in reviving the equivalent of a Cold War. They're going to make and continue to make huge profits from that Russia boogeyman. And yet again, as the open letter alludes to, let's get real about what's at stake. We can get self-righteous, which is really odd given all the interference the U.S. government has done in elections and coups and so forth around the world. We can get in high dudgeon about it, but that only is a way to further have a Manichaean view of the world perpetuated and perhaps help to bring about nuclear annihilation for all of us through escalating towards Russia.
What do you make of the fact that it's people like Democratic Senator Bob Menendez, who are feeding a little bit of this hysteria? I quoted him at the beginning of our interview. I quoted Independent Senator Angus King, echoing similar sentiments. Are the Democrats and Republicans somewhat relatively in agreement when they whip up the anti-Russia hysteria?
I think there's a lot of truth to the statement that we have a war party with Democratic and Republican wings. It's rooted in the political economy, which makes the war industries hugely profitable, as well as geopolitical dominance efforts in so much of the world. And that is a phenomenon that is so extremely dangerous, and it requires that we at the grassroots, through our own independent media, through organizing, lobbying, demonstrations, agitation, pressure on elected officials, and in the electoral process, we demand a turn away from really what is this lemmings over the cliff suicidal push coming from these folks who are really abrogating a fundamental moral responsibility as elected officials in Washington, and that is to preserve and protect and defend. Not only the Constitution of the United States, but to truly defend us as human beings. And if you're pushing us closer to the brink of nuclear annihilation, that's hardly protecting us. One other quick point about Trump. The more that Trump is baited as a tool of Putin, and frankly, with, in my own opinion, a lack of solid evidence that he's quote unquote a tool, he's a tool and seeks tool of global corporate capitalism, of which Putin is part, the more that baiting goes on, the less it is feasible for Trump in a times of confrontation to do what John F. Kennedy did during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and that is to find an accommodation. These baiters, these Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill, these editorial writers at the New York Times and the Washington Post, they are pushing Trump into a mentality where he will have a motivation to prove that he's tough on Russia, and that could mean blowing up the world.
It feels as though there is a very broad investment, emotional investment in American imperial prestige that exists among elites, whether they're elites in the media or elites in law, in the White House or in Congress, and some of this hysteria is echoed in Trump's approach to North Korea, where that's been the sort of one bright spot in U.S. foreign policy, with this warming of relations between the U.S. and a longtime traditional enemy, North Korea, where you had people, liberal voices, decrying the fact that Trump was attempting to make peace with Kim Jong-un, because somehow that would diminish the US's stature in East Asia. Do you see some of that with the Russia story?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are so many folks who had, or I would have thought, had a deep understanding of the post-World War II U.S. foreign policy around the world, have been induced by a lot of media agitation and so forth to believe and assert that somehow it's Russia that is the big threat to world peace, as though the United States became angelic. And this is counter not only to history, but the reality. The United States, more than 800 military bases around the world, all the rest of the countries in the world combined have 40 foreign military bases outside their own borders. And when you look at from the lens of and through the lens of not just history that we can expect to write later on if we're around to write it, but even in the present time, history written in the current moment. The role of someone like Rachel Maddow on MSNBC is just irresponsible and lends itself to pushing our country more and more into military confrontation with Russia. And so many progressives need to confront the fact that they've put their trust in media celebrities who are leading us down a very deadly garden path.
And it there's this real sense as well that Putin himself quite enjoys the game that he sees play out in the United States. You know, Vladimir Putin is no angel. He is deserving a lot of the kind of criticism that Russian, activists inside Russia have leveled at him for his authoritarian tendencies. One could perhaps put him on the same spectrum as Kim Jong-un, a different part of the spectrum, but on that list of leaders that we may not admire, but that doesn't necessarily mean we need to turn into an enemy, right? I mean, it feels often as though Trump is exactly the kind of U.S. president that Putin enjoys having, because we here in the United States rile ourselves up into a frenzy, which tends to serve Putin at home, because then Russians feel like he's being their steadfast, strong leader.
Well, you know, Putin, of course, as you said, is no angel. He's been repressive. There is some space for speech and free speech in Russia, but those media outlets and so forth are under some really bad pressure. When you compare the political environment in Russia, say, to Saudi Arabia, it's just grimly laughable that the U.S. mass media and politicians point to Putin when the U.S.
Sure.
is embracing the tyrants, for instance, of Saudi Arabia, so repressive in their own country, slaughtering people in Yemen, where it's far worse by any measure in terms of human rights. And yet the U.S. Uncle Sam has arms around, nurturing, making tremendous deals there. We ultimately have this choice of whether to put this in perspective or see the world through a red, white, and blue lens.
Well, Norman, where can people find the letter we've been discussing and also add their own name to it alongside your name and people like Noam Chomsky and Gloria Steinem? I understand Andrew Bacevich and Reverend William Barber, Alice Walker have also signed on to the letter.
Yes, you can link to the petition, and that petition has a link to the letter itself on the Nation website, and people can simply go to rootsaction.org. Also, the full letter text can be found at thenation.com.
And we will link to it from our website, too. Thank you so much for joining us today, Norman.
Thank you, Sonali.
Norman Solomon is a journalist with ExposeFacts.org, a project of the Institute for Public Accuracy, where he is the executive director. He's also the author of the book War Made Easy, How Pundits and Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, and a co-founder of RootsAction.org. We've been discussing a letter urging perspective on the U.S.-Russia summit. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.